ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Robert Swartwood podcast. It has been a while since I've done a podcast last, mostly because I've been trying to get my guest, Robert Ford, or Bob Ford, known to other people, on the podcast for quite some time, and now he's here. So Bob Ford is the author of such acclaimed books as Samson and Denial and The Compound, recently released by Thunderstorm Books in limited hardcover, and is available now in paperback and ebook. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So we'll talk about, you know what, let's talk about Samson and Denial, because that was the first book I read by you, and I think the same for a lot of people. It's a really great novella. Everyone really loves it.
Thanks, man.
Are you going to basically just give me a kind of a quick synopsis of Samson and Denial?
Well, I lived in Philadelphia for a couple of years when I went to college. And it was my first real experience living in a major city. And the city of Philadelphia has got some, let's say, interesting street people and characters. And the setup of Samson Denial is Samson Gallows is the owner of a pawn shop. And he does a little bit of drug dealing on the side. And unfortunately, his younger brother, Marky, gets involved with the Russian mafia. And that causes lots of problems. Along the same lines, a junkie comes in with the head of a 3,000-year-old mummy head, and it's got some certain powers attached to it, and it leads to basically the mafia coming after Samson, and his wife goes missing, and it's pretty much nonstop violence and action and bloodhem through the city of Philadelphia.
All right, and that's a good place to stop, because I don't want you to give too much of the story away, but it's definitely something worth reading, and I think everyone should definitely read it. And of course, I'll provide links here where you can pick up the ebook edition. I normally would save time later to talk about if you know what's next, and we'll still talk about it, what else you have coming out. But are you going to continue that story? I'd heard rumors that you would.
Yeah, that was actually one of the first things that I pitched to the guys at Thunderstorm was a sequel to Samson and Denial. And it is in the works. It's going to be called The Crimson Sisters. And it is going to be a full-length novel that is a sequel, and it picks up with Samson. And you will be seeing, if you haven't read the book... If you haven't read the book, it's a little bit difficult, but if you have, the beautiful Crimson Witches, they make a good return. Let's leave it at that
for
now.
Very, very good. We'll leave it at that. So let's go on and talk about The Compound, which came out pretty recently. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you were on Fox 43, the local Fox affiliate news channel, the morning show, pimping this book, which is not something a lot of authors are able to do.
No. That was an interesting. I had a fan who really enjoyed the book, and she actually went to high school with somebody who worked at Fox 43, and she kind of sent him an email just saying how much she loved the book, and you know they may want to contact me because I was a local writer. And one thing led to another. It worked its way up the chain. And next thing you know, I got an email from the executive producer wanting me on the morning show. So that was kind of a fun thing. That was pretty cool. That went over very well.
I guess we should talk about just what The Compound is. It's not giving too much away that it is a zombie novel, but what else is going on here?
Yes. Well, it's if anybody has read any of my work, they know I tend to write more from a character-driven standpoint. You know, it's always about the characters and not necessarily the situation that they're in. The Compound takes place in Manchester, Pennsylvania, where I currently live, and it just so happens that a zombie apocalypse is breaking out. It involves a divorced set of parents and their 16-year-old daughter, and it's more about the struggles of just people coping to deal with, you know, how do they handle everyday things in a zombie apocalypse while this is all going on. And it also centers around a very, very modern, futuristic prison called Tartarus. That is a federal penitentiary. It is a self-sustaining prison to take all the weight off taxpayers so they don't have to put a dime into it. So as a result, it has solar panels and water reserves and everything you possibly could need to survive a zombie apocalypse.
Now, what was the idea for the prison? I mean, how did you come up with the idea of a self-sustaining prison? Because they don't, I mean, those don't exist, right?
They don't exist. There are certain places around the world that they are considering doing such a thing. But at this point, honestly, the idea started brewing for the prison. I used to run an ad agency in Harrisburg, and we were involved in a lot of state-run organizations. And there's some less than ethical things that happen with the homeless people from Philadelphia and being moved around from city to city. And it's basically everything that they can do to take the burden off the taxpayer. So the idea for the prison sort of started spiraling out from that. You know, everyone wants to have criminals behind bars, but they also complain about it when they have to pay taxes in order to do this.
Right.
So, you know, the idea of having a modern day prison that was self-sustaining just sort of started brewing, and that became a main component in the compound itself.
So then let's talk about the compound in terms of the prison. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you deal a lot with prison life, with security, with the lingo.
Yes.
Is this just like watching a lot of Oz late at night? or were you visiting prisoners?
No, actually, I did not. No, I stayed away from some of my family members. No, I never visited a prison. But I did read and research quite a bit about the security of prisons. You know, essentially how to break into a prison instead of breaking out. And the culture and lifestyle of the inmates. There's a lot of books that are there. There's a really amazing book I read about Rikers Island, and it talked about the culture of the inmates and basically the hierarchy. And it sometimes doesn't have a whole lot to do with age or what you're in for. A lot of it has to do with what happens when you're behind bars and what you do then. There was a lot of research that went into that, absolutely, because it had to sound legitimate. It had to sound real, because I was painting, you know, the idea of a culture behind bars, you know, when I was writing The Compound.
Now, there was something in the novel that kind of surprised me, and you and I hadn't spoken about this before, and it's a little bit controversial, because I guess, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a horror novel. Obviously, it's going to be dark, but something happens in the book, and I don't necessarily want to give it away, which is really kind of tough to talk about if I'm not going to give it away, but something happens that I was surprised, and I was almost like, I could not believe you went there. You did not, like, there was kind of a safe way of playing it, but I don't know. I mean, really, I guess, should I say spoiler alert and just say what it is?
You can go ahead. You can do that.
All right. So, okay. So,
I don't think you're giving a whole lot away at that point.
Right now, basically, it's not giving too much away. I mean, what happens is obviously a zombie apocalypse is going on. There are these guys in prison who kind of go out for supplies. And then while they're out, they happen to run into the wife and the 16-year-old daughter. And they end up taking the 16-year-old daughter back to the prison and having their way with her. And obviously, this is something you wouldn't see on the Sci-Fi Channel.
No.
So, I mean, you know, and you don't really see anything going on, but just the fact that, you know, I mean, it's not like, you know, we were not really talking too graphic on the page.
Right.
It's more of just knowing that it has occurred.
Yes.
So, I mean, and you, I mean, this is something, I don't know, I mean, you have children. Is this...
Yes. It's, well,
it, was it, well, was it tough to, I guess, write that?
It was tough, but I mean, I think, you know, when I write, you know, well, I think when any writer writes, when they're writing horror, they tend to write about the things that will scare them and affect them the most. Obviously, being in such a situation, what's the worst possible thing that could happen to me is something happening to one of my kids being taken away in that situation. And you know, yeah, you're right. There was a safe play to make, but you know, the reality is bad things happen.
And I'm not saying, you know, to do away with the bad things. Like, I think the safe play would have been having the wife taken instead, instead of the 16-year-old daughter. But again, you had the 16-year-old daughter. Like I said, it was, you know, it's a risky thing. I can see it being turned off for some readers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a bold move. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think this actually says a lot with just the way publishing has been going. Because, again, it was such a risky move that I could see a lot of publishers being very hesitant and leery to publish something like that. But kind of the way things have changed now where authors having a lot more freedom, you can kind of get away with things that are a risk. Now, is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with exactly what you said, but I also think, I mean, as a readership as a whole, I think that we have become a little bit desensitized. So that level, I mean, you know, I remember reading Cujo, and you know, I mean, that book's been out long enough, so I guess there's not really a spoiler alert for this, but the ending of that, when Tatter dies, I was blown away. Because that was such a taboo thing. You know, I mean, I lent my mother that book, and I remember her throwing the book across the room, just going, you know, cursing Stephen King. He killed the kid. How could he kill the kid? And just kind of losing her mind for this. You know, now in some of the storylines that we see, I mean, that's just tame. That's tame stuff.
This is true.
You know, so, I mean, I think as a whole, our readership has become desensitized to that, and they need a little bit more shock value. The things that we read and see on the evening news, I mean, that's way worse than anything that we can come up with in fiction. Well, for the most part.
So do you think it's becoming this thing then where, because everybody for the most part is becoming desensitized, that writers feel that they really have to just, you know, they really have to up the shock value even more? I mean, at some point it's going to become, you know, it's almost like we're going to hit a ceiling.
Yeah, we're going to hit an apogee, and that's kind of, we're going to down free fall, you know. Well, I think so. And I think that's also why I think, you know, instead of just straight shock value, you have to hit them emotionally. And I don't think that, from a shock value standpoint, I don't think the emotional hit is ever going to die out, you know. I think if you engage the reader and you make them care about your characters so that, you know, when something happens, it does start affecting them at a deeper level as a reader, I think that's where we need to start going more and more. I don't think that'll die off, you know, as opposed to the traditional shock value type of things, you know, of just killing off a character or doing something like that.
Now, like most zombie books, this kind of, there's definitely an ending, but you could continue the story. Do you feel like you want to return to the characters, or basically the book is done as it is?
Well, I don't know. It's been fun. I mean, I never intended to write a zombie novel at all, actually. But some of the reviews and the requests, I mean, I have had requests. Are you going to continue? Are you going to do something else?
Because basically the way the book ends is the father goes into the house to find his son. And you hear the gunshot, and then another gunshot, and that's the way it ends. I don't want to give anything away to anybody.
That sounds really familiar. I don't know. That ending sounds really familiar. I don't know if that's mine or not, but that sounds really familiar.
It's a good thing Brian Keene doesn't listen to these. So,
you know, the one thing that if I would ever revisit this world. The one thing that I was curious about, one of my characters that I had never planned on at the beginning is a character named Calvin. And he's kind of an old biker man. He's got his Harley, and his wife recently died. And I always wondered what happened to the rest of his biker brothers. That was the only thing that made me curious, is to revisit that world anymore. How are they faring out, you know, during the apocalypse? What's going on with them? But I wouldn't rule anything out, but right now I have other stuff lined up ahead of that, you know, if anything would happen.
So now let's move on to craft and talk about just something we had been discussing earlier in the evening, which is chapter lengths and really chapters in general.
Sure.
Well, I remember reading recently that Joe Conrath had talked about how he has gotten to the point where he kind of likes to do away with chapters in general because he doesn't want to give a reader a place to stop.
Sure.
For me, sure. I think chapters are very important, and I think the more chapters, the better. When you have a chapter and it ends at the right point that forces the reader to continue to the next chapter, that's obviously you're doing your job well as a writer. Right. You know, if you're getting to the point where you end a chapter and then the reader does not want to continue, that's when you have an issue. I feel that James Patterson, and the reason I think James Patterson is so popular mostly is because of his super short chapters.
Right, right.
You know, he could have a 400-page book. There are over 100 chapters. You can breeze through it.
Exactly.
If it was the same length book and there's only 20 chapters, it might take you a while to read that.
Sure.
And it's more of that psychological thing where I think when you finish a chapter, you might glance ahead. How many chapters is you know, how many pages is the next chapter?
Yeah.
Oh, it's only, you know, 3 pages. Okay, and you read it. How many pages is the next chapter? Oh, it's 4 pages. You read it. As opposed, and then, you know, you might end up going through 50 pages before you know it, as opposed to you finish a chapter. How many pages are left? Oh, there's like 15 in this chapter.
Exactly.
I don't have time. And in the e-books, you know, with percentage-wise, it's the same type of thing. You know, I can see the next chapter. Oh, it's going to take about maybe, you know, 8 minutes to read.
Yeah, you can gauge what it's going
to
take.
Or it's going to take 4 minutes to read. Or if it's going to take 25 minutes to read, I don't have time for that.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and what are your thoughts really about chapter lengths? I mean, was this something that when you were writing The Compound that you really took into consideration?
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree more with the short chapter breaks. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, and no disrespect to Conrath. I mean, he's certainly entitled to his opinion, and he's doing a fine job of selling himself, but no, I couldn't agree more. I think there's a great used bookstore in downtown York called the York Book Emporium. And a few years back, it was Brian Keene, Jesus Gonzalez, and myself. And Brian pointed out a book to me called Anything for Billy, by Larry McMurtry. Writes great, amazing westerns. And he said, if you haven't read this, you've got to pick it up. So I picked up the Western and checked it out and was blazing through this book. Couldn't put it down. And it didn't hit me until about halfway through that he did exactly the technique you were just talking about. Every chapter, the longest chapter in the whole book was 3.5 pages. And I did exactly what you said. When I finished a chapter, I looked ahead and went, it's only 3 pages. I can finish that. And each chapter started off on a good hook, and it ended with a cliffhanger. So with outlining The Compound and kind of getting that rolling, that was my intention from the beginning, is to write that way. And some of the feedback that I've been getting is, you know, yeah, it's you know, I couldn't put it down. It's pretty much nonstop. And with the different groups of characters, I think it enabled me a little bit easier to keep going on that cliffhanger and hook element. But yeah, I intentionally wrote it with very short chapters ahead of time. You know, and I think it works.
I had read somewhere, I think it was a science fiction writer, and I forget what his name is, but he would begin his books with short chapters, and as the book progressed, the chapters would start getting longer and longer and longer. And the idea was to get those short chapters to get the reader into the book, into the world. And as the story progressed, the chapters became longer so that it didn't really matter anymore.
Right.
As opposed to, and I think there definitely is, when you're doing, you know, something along those lines, what's the word for it? It's not necessarily pacing, but to keep everything, like, you wouldn't want to have, you know, for a book of 30 chapters, having the first 10 chapters be like a few pages long, and then chapter 10 being 30 pages long.
Sure.
You know, you definitely want to have a good consistency
in
terms of the chapter lengths.
Right.
And that can be difficult sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times where I've found, I think, you know, I might have a longer chapter and I realize, okay, you know what, I could probably cut it here, make it a new chapter, just to be consistent with the rest of the book. And other times, obviously, you know, a chapter needs to be a certain length.
Well, and I think for pacing, I think it does give the reader a chance to take a little breath or slow things down a little bit. If you're just coming off a section of the book where it's high-paced action, it does give them the opportunity to slow it down a little bit if you need to. But for me, as a reader and as a writer, those short chapters that are jam-packed, I mean, it's a breakneck pace, you know, and I don't know, it seems to work for me.
And really, I mean, not even the chapters, but also in terms of scene breaks. For me, I like, and I talked about Side Effects. The other night I watched Side Effects, which was the Steven Soderbergh film, and I thought it was excellent. And the way, have you seen it? The way it was shot was just, it was so tight. It was. I mean, there was so much story, but like they would have a scene and just, you know, they wouldn't set up with, oh, where it's happening or whatever else. They would just go right into the meat of it. And it reminded me a lot of Law and Order. I think that writers can learn much from Law and Order, where, you know, when you have the detectives going from one crime scene to another, you don't have them in their car or talking about whatever. You have them basically, boom, already talking to the next suspect or talking to the next witness.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just make it as tight as possible.
Just cut out all the fat.
Yeah. Exactly. The same thing that Elmer Leonard always said, you know, cut the parts that people skip.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm trying to think what else we can talk about. And I think we really covered everything. We talked about The Compound. We talked about Samson in Denial. And you talked a little bit about another follow-up for Samson in Denial. Is there any other books you'll be working on?
Yeah, I'm actually working on another dark crime novel right now called Big Stakes Jackie. I took some notes on that. I took some notes on that a while back and rediscovered them after I finished The Compound and just kind of realized how absolutely disgusting this book is going to be. It's pretty foul, but it's going to be dark crime, which if there were fans of Samson Denial, they're really going to like this. And recently started making notes for a novel called King of Pain, which ought to be kind of interesting. That one's just starting to really gel, and I'll keep people posted on that as it fleshes out a little bit more.
Excellent. All right, folks, I'm going to have links here for Samson in Denial and for The Compound, and, of course, a link to Bob's website. And Bob has been kind enough to give away three electronic copies of The Compound, to anybody who's willing to leave a link to this podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, wherever. Share the link. Let us know in the comments section. And let us know by, I'd say, Friday midnight. And we'll pick a random three people. And Bob will send you an ebook copy of The Compound. So, Bob, thank you so much for being on the program. And,
Robert, thanks for having me.
I'm sure we'll talk again sometime soon. And see you, folks. Bye.